The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, it's Friday night. We have another week. Weekend just ahead, and then another week after that. Big things are happening all around the world. And in many ways, the things happening all around the world can be traced directly to recent and not-so-recent history. One thing follows another, follows another. We have had some wonderful times with Harry Cooper recently. Harry is back tonight, the first 2 hours, to talk to us about something very special, the fall and evaporation of the Soviet Union. Harry, of course, is the founder of SharkHunters.com, the world's only international source of U-boat history and much other history beside that. There are some amazing videos, DVDs, and books available at SharkHunters.com. If you like history and want to get a grasp on the reality of what happened in World War II, there is your ticket. We're going to do something special tonight. Harry goes on patrols once or twice a year with various members from his organization and others who want to go along and rolls back the lies and obfuscation of history to take a real first-hand eyewitness look at many remarkable things. Back in 1992, the Shark Hunters Patrol went into Russia, and that is quite a story. We're going to talk about that with Harry. And if you can, go to Rents.com, look under guests on the left-hand side there, and look under Harry Cooper's name, look for photos, and let those load up so you can take this little trip with us. Hello, Harry. Welcome back.
Well, good evening, Jeff.
How in the heck are you?
Pretty good. I have to comment on something I heard on your news broadcast about...
Not mine.
Oh, okay. See, the sex crimes in the military... on the rise like mad. Well, you know, what do they expect putting men and women together?
What do they expect?
Yeah,
one rape an hour, something like that. I mean, it's and that's what we hear about, or what is allegedly projected. Of course, obviously.
Yeah. Yep. When my daughter graduated high school 3 years ago, she was approached by the Navy, which is a great organization, and they offered her $20,000 to sign up, just to sign. And I told her, nope, better things, you know, because you're going to get a surprise from your sergeant.
You bet.
So,
You got
anyhow,
it.
Didn't mean to get off track here.
No, that's on track. By the way, the military is being, as you know, and most of you folks listening know, used, abused, and tossed in the trash at an unprecedented rate in our history.
Yep.
The VA, the Veterans Administration, no, doesn't work. It's if you get good treatment, it's, and there are some dedicated people in there, don't get me wrong, but the bureaucracy is absolutely a joke, tragic joke for many. They load these kids up, and they are kids. They're teenagers when they go overseas.
Oh, yeah,
and they come
18.
Back, they're 18, 19 years old. When they come back, they're 60, 70. They're shot. They're on 4, 5, 10, 15 different prescriptions, all kinds of psychotropic drugs. Over 150,000 of them are expected to suicide out before their normal term is up on this planet, as they say.
Yeah,
so it's not good.
My daughter's going for her doctorate in psychology so she can work with returning soldiers.
Well, that's very admirable. She'll never run out of clients, that's for damn sure.
No, especially if we have people in the White House like we have today.
Well, a criminal, a felon, you know, we know that. We all know that story. You get the feeling, I don't know if you do, Harry, but your sense and your understanding of history is really extraordinary. Do you get a feeling that we're really lurching towards something very big and not pleasant at all? Do you get
that
sense?
Well, we're not lurching toward it. We're being pushed toward it. Yeah, because of the work I do. And as you know, there's a lot of spooks in membership from either retired spooks or current spooks in various agencies in the U.S., the Mossad, the KGB, the German, and it's all the same. You know, Barry in the White House is not making stupid mistakes, in our opinion. He's doing this deliberately to drive the United States
one-third of the, might be one-fourth, but anyway, one-fourth or one-third of the Air Force planes are grounded due to budget cutbacks.
Right, right. And there are several carrier task groups that are tied up in harbor.
Right. They continue to disable or lay idle in harbors. These are major capital ships.
Aircraft carriers.
Yeah, but
Barry's got enough money. He's spending, I think I saw on TV today, it's about $100 million.
$100 million to take a trip to Africa.
That's right, to take a trip to Africa.
And I are
paying for it, Jeff, and all your listeners.
This country will be paying for it for as long as there's a country.
Yeah, we need to send some people to prison.
I don't think that's good enough, but I'll take it.
I know, but you can't say anything more harsh than that.
No. No, I mean, these people should do hard labor. They shouldn't get to sit in a cell with TV.
That's right. I think a long time in prison is much worse than an easy exit.
Yeah, in many ways, you're completely correct. Again, look at Harry Cooper's name, please. The fall of the Soviet Union. This is a big story, not understood at all by Americans, of course, who understand less and less every day. Look at photos under Harry Cooper's name there, and do click on that and load them up. And we're going to have fun. Harry, how often do you take patrols? How often do you go on these wonderful trips of exploration, which I would just love to go on one with you? I don't travel, but it would be fascinating.
It depends. There have been times we've gone five different places, not altogether, but I mean 2 weeks here, 2 weeks there, et cetera.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then other times, like right now, we're going only one patrol this year, but next year, 2014, Argentina, Berlin, southern Germany, Austria, which we never miss, and a couple other places, maybe the old U-boat bunkers on the French coast, where we've been there many times before, but we stopped some years ago. We'd go into Brest and Lorient, and we had U-boat veterans with us who were in those bunkers with their boats during the war years. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
These were the bunkers and Brest?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes, Brest is always a good destination.
Yeah, Brest, the bunkers at Brest are still being used by the French Navy, whereas all the rest
mm-hmm.
of them,
mm-hmm.
Lorient was used by the French Navy last time we were there, but they mm-hmm. have been deactivated as a military garrison. Saint-Nazaire, La Rochelle, and Bordeaux
mm-hmm.
never were used by the, not in recent years, not by the French Navy.
I cannot even imagine what it was like to go into those U-boat pens with actual veterans who served there. That just amazes me.
Yeah, the first time we went there, we had two guys with us from the U-boat, and one of them, Detlef Zimmermann, who was on U-315, we just got inside the bunker at Brest, and he just said, I can't do this, and he turned around and walked out.
Really?
It brought back a lot of hard memories for him. And other guy, Jerry Richter, or Gerhard Richter, we were walking through and he stopped and he pointed at one of the bays. He said, my boat was right there just before we went through Gibraltar into the Mediterranean and they sank the aircraft carrier HMS Ark Royal and banged up the battleship HMS Malaya so bad it was out for about a year.
Oh, what a story.
These guys were living history, and we had hundreds of them in our membership.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, most of them are gone now, but
mm-hmm.
from all sides. But that's why I say the trip to South Germany and Austria, we never miss, because they can't call it a Memorial Day because you're not allowed to do anything in Europe.
Yeah, I understand.
Right. So it's a memorial. We go to Ulrichsberg, which is Ulrich's Mountain, and at the very top there's a ruined church, and there's a huge cross about 40 feet high, and they have a ceremony there remembering everyone who fell in battle, no matter what uniform they were wearing, and so we're always the honored guests there. Unfortunately, every year there are more and more empty seats out there where the veterans sit.
Yeah.
When we first went there in 1990, there were like 5,000 veterans because they asked me to make a short little speech too. And I was looking out there, and this was Austria. And they had different laws back then, and you could see the sun bouncing off all the knights' crosses and the various medals.
They could wear their honors. Wow.
At that time, they could, yes. Not anymore.
Yeah. Well, thank goodness at least that happened.
We get a lot of memories, and that's when I first met Jörg Haider, but that's another whole story.
We're going to do that story one day on this program. Hold on just a second, Harry. We'll be right back.
Very well.
Okay, Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com. Just a remarkable website to go to. A great trip through history, past and present. And when Harry takes the folks on these patrols, they really get to see things that nobody else does. Okay, tonight's topic, in our first 2 hours with Harry, we're going to talk about... Well, you tell us. Give us a thumbnail sketch of it, and then we'll get right into it.
Okay. We were the first group ever allowed into Russia after the fall of communism, the Soviet Union. I was there the year before when it was still the Soviet Union to kind of, you know, boots on the ground to lay everything out. None of our tours are just pulled out of thin air. I always go there first and make sure everything's going to run right. And the first time I went there, 1991, it was still the Soviet Union. Here I come right out of Florida into Moscow in December, and all I had was my Florida clothes on. And it was a bit brisk there in Moscow. The guy who met me, he knew everything about me. He knew my birthday. He knew my wife's birthday. He knew my son's birthday. And he said he knew my granddaughter's birthday. And I said, I don't have a granddaughter. And he described a photograph of a lady holding a baby. I said, that the infant is my daughter, and that's her godmother. And he says, oh, we must correct that in the files. So I got to meet Fleet Admiral Vladimir Chernyevin, the last five star of the Soviet Union.
How did they know everything about you, Harry? You weren't really a big fish then, were you?
I have no idea. To this day, I still don't know how they knew everything about me. But they invited me. I had sent a letter to Mikhail Gorbachev. And next thing I know, I got a fax. This was back in the days of faxes. From somebody I had never heard of in the Soviet Union, inviting me over. All I had to do was pay for my airfare. They gave me a five-room apartment in Moscow and drove me every place and met all the top admirals of the Soviet Navy. And we made the arrangements for the following year. And that was when we came in 1992. It was part historical, of course, because we were the first group allowed into the former Soviet Union. And it was also a bit of a dog and pony show for this fellow who I had met in 91. Turned out later he was chief of intelligence for the Soviet Navy. So everywhere we went, we had a small group at that time. Everywhere we went, there was press, there was newspapers, there were video people. In 91 when I went, stepping back, they invited me to a round table. They love these round tables, although this was a rectangular table of about 80 people and Russians, and they were discussing whether to give the Sakhalin Islands back to Japan. I had no idea what they were saying. I don't speak or understand Russian. But there I was, and all the cameras were on me, and the reporters were hovering over me, so I'd have my notebook, and I'd be scribbling stuff in a notebook and looking, very serious. And so they loved the press. So when we went there, we were the first Americans, first anybody, into the Soviet Union, except for Bill and Hillary, of course. They had been there way back during the Soviet times. We were the first ones in since the Soviet Union fell. And we were in three cities. We started out in St. Petersburg. Then we went up to Kaliningrad, which used to be Königsberg in East Prussia, and then down to Moscow. And if you want to follow along with the photos, look at photo number one. We were the guests of the Soviet Navy, and that's our group in front of the villa. They put us up in a very nice villa. Soviet Union was not a poor country. It was a country full of poor people, but the government lived well. The you'll see ABC, et cetera, on there. A, the guy in the suit, that's Anatoly, the chief of intelligence for the Soviet Union, the Soviet Navy. B, that's a retired U.S. colonel from intelligence, Army intelligence. C was a guy who, he was a spy. He was a CIA guy. D, that's me in my fancy blue blazer. And E, that was Dr. Schatz. He was a first officer on a German U-boat during the war. While we were in this villa, we saw a guy, we had a balcony. We're up on the second floor, and there's a huge open space, but it was under the roof. And then there was a balcony on the other side, and we saw a guy who looked like an American come out of a room, scurry down the hallway, and duck into another room. And I asked our host who that was, and it turned out it was a U.S. CIA agent who had defected to the Soviet Union. And, of course, he couldn't come back home, otherwise they'd have put him in a pokey. So he was living in that one room of the villa in St. Petersburg. I don't think that'd be a whole lot of fun being locked up in a room there. But I guess that's the price to pay. Then we went. Now, St. Petersburg, in my opinion, is one of the most beautiful cities in the world. Those gold domes, they're really gold. They take a couple of pounds of solid gold, hammer it out into sheets, and stick it on the roof. So it's very, very plush. We went to many of the palaces, including Paulusk. I don't have any photos. They were still quite paranoid. They didn't like a lot of photos being taken. So we went to Paulusk, which was Paul's palace. And his son decided he wanted to be the czar, and the wife said, well, that's a good idea. So they poisoned poor old Paul, and the son became the new czar. Very few czars died of old age. Somebody whacked him along the way, including one where they threw a bomb into his carriage, and it blew off his legs, and he hemorrhaged and died.
Oh.
So when they released the report, they weren't very good in English way back in the 1800s, I guess. So they told the other crowned heads of Europe that the czar died of hemorrhoids instead of hemorrhaging.
Well, they got it half right, huh?
Yeah.
And there was a hem in there somewhere. They hummed and hawed.
Was dead. That was the important part, dead.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They had a band out there playing American music.
Which number picture are we on most closely here?
Well, we're still on number one.
Okay.
Number two is...
we got to take a break, Harry. Hold on, would you please?
Okay.
We'll do that and
I'll
come right back.
I'll be back there next time.
Very good. Harry Cooper and I will be right back. Okay, back talking with Harry Cooper about his trip to the Soviet Union. 1990, what was this?
92.
Yeah, all right.
The Soviet Union had just evaporated.
Mm-hmm.
So,
or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Into it.
We also visited the Palace Pushkin, which is one of the most magnificent palaces in the world. And the interesting thing there, there was a guy dressed like Peter the Great riding on a white horse in the courtyard, and there was a reason for that, which we'll touch on a little later. Photo two is just a touristy photo of the Neva River. That's where the mad monk finally died. They fed him poison tea cakes, and that didn't kill him. Then they beat him and stabbed him. That didn't kill him. They shot him. He was still alive, so they finally threw him into the Neva River, where he finally drowned. photo number three, that is the old cruiser Aurora, which is maintained there in Russia, like our old Ironsides is here in the U.S. You see the red arrow pointing to the forward gun on that ship. That was the gun they fired in 1917 to signal the start of the Bolshevik Revolution.
Huh.
They didn't shoot at anything. They just fired into the air as as a signal to get started.
Mm-hmm.
And we travel on board. Well, we visit on board that ship, and of course we're given the grand tour because we come on board with admirals and things. We also now incidentally that Blue Hotel right behind it with the white roofs, that's where we stayed when we went back in 95 and 96.
Mm-hmm.
We went to the ballet, and our box was about 2 feet from the stage. And they said in about 40 different languages, photographs, videos were totally forbidden. And you'll see me there in photo number four. That's me holding the old-fashioned gigantic tape recorder. That's a four-star admiral standing with us there, Admiral Ivanov. And the short guy in between us, that's Anatoly, the chief of intelligence for the Soviet Navy. So I figured I'd go ahead and take videos, because what are they going to say to these guys?
Right. That's a VHS camcorder.
This thing, this was 1992, pal.
Mm-hmm.
That was state-of-the-art back in them days.
Yep.
So then that was Admiral Vitaly Ivanov. He was a member of Shark Hunters. He's passed away now. And photo number five, that's another one of our members. You'll notice he has two stars on his rank emblem up there.
Mm-hmm.
They have a different way of showing rank. They have small stars for officers from captain on down, but they've got big stars with a red circle in the middle for admirals. So this guy's a two-star. He's a rear admiral. We toured the Navy headquarters, the Admiralty, and he was our guide there. And we toured classrooms, the simulator labs. We watched the Russian cadets working on battle simulators. And we spent the evening at the Marinsky Theater, which is where the ballet was performed when Rudolf Nureyev was working in that very ballet company.
Huh.
They performed Swan Lake, which is the only thing they do in there in that particular theater. They do the same thing all the time.
Yeah, Swan Lake. can't lose with a winner, right?
That's stick for sure.
Yeah. So
we toured a Russian Navy museum, and we met a group of Russian submarine veterans from the war, and we were interviewed by various press groups, including Izvestia and TASS, etc. So now if you look at photo number six, that's just another one of the big palaces there. Number seven and number eight, that is real gold. And number nine also, that's real gold on those fountains. That's at the palace, I can't pronounce it very well, Peter Voretz, which means Peter's favorite palace.
You know, if those statues were over here, they wouldn't last long.
No, somebody would be scraping the gold off them. I don't know how thick the gold was, or if it was gold plate or solid gold, but it's the Russian Tsar family was so incredibly wealthy, they could have fought all the royal, the crown heads of Europe, all the kingdoms. They could have bought all that with pocket change. We also went through what they call the armory, which is a museum several blocks long, several blocks wide, and several stories high, with nothing but the wealth of the czars in there. And that was only a drop in the bucket. These, you know, the last thing the Swiss bankers want to see is somebody pop up with the DNA proving he is a Romanov, because there are hundreds of billions, trillions even, of dollars that belongs to the czar's family locked up in their banks.
And, it legally does belong to them.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess right now, as long as nobody's alive to say they're a Romanov, it stays in the bank. But if a Romanov was to pop up, that would cause them some serious problems.
It would cause the Romanov some serious problems, too.
Well, yeah, they probably wouldn't live long.
No.
They'd have an accident or something.
Well, look what they did to George Haider.
Yeah. Well, I got a surprise for you on that toward the end of the show.
All right.
Jörg Haider. He was a friend of mine. Let's see. We also went to the Fortress Kronstadt, which was the naval training base by St. Petersburg. And we toured one of the cruisers there. We toured the cruiser, can't even remember the name of the cruiser now. Smolny, that's it, Smolny, S-M-O-L-N-I-Y. That was where they trained the officers, navigation trainings, etc. Photo 10 and 11 are a couple of palaces there, like I said.
Quite amazing architecture.
Oh, it's incredible. And the gold towers, that's really gold.
Yeah. Yeah.
Photo number 12, I find really unique. You can tell by the architecture, it's a church.
Sure is.
But when we were there and we toured through it, it had been turned into a storehouse, a warehouse for the Soviet and later the Russian Navy. And fortunately, if you happen to be a Christian like me, when we came back in 95 and then in 96, it was a church again. So the taboos against religion and church, et cetera, had been lifted, which was, you know, a good thing in my opinion. Number 13 is also that same church that had been used as a warehouse. What else do we? Oh, we traveled every place in staff cars, and you'll see item number 14 and 15. When I was there in 91, they made me an honest-to-God commissar of the Soviet Union.
Really? Yeah. All right. Let me hear more about that. We got to do a little business here. Come right back. Commissar, okay. Cooper.
Commissar, yeah, that's what it says on that little thing there.
Very good. All right, just a second. We'll come right back with Harry as we tour the Soviet Union in 1992 and shortly thereafter. We get together with Harry once a month, and we have many more patrols ahead of us. These are wonderful forays, time travel journeys into the past. And as I said at the top of the program, if we really don't learn from the past, we don't have a chance. And unfortunately, we don't have a chance in either case because of who's running the world. But it would be nice to think that history can teach, and history does. The problem with history is it's almost all a lie. And so when Harry goes on patrol, the lies melt away and the truth presents. And I only wish there were more veterans still in Shark Hunters. There are some, but these men are leaving us, and just an extraordinary epoch in history. A horror. 50 million people and at least were murdered by the Bolshevik Zionist Jews in Russia, and we don't know how many died as a result of the mad maniacs in England bombing Germans for 3 years.
Yeah, Bomber Harris.
Mad Bomber Harris, Madman Harris, and that drunk creep, Churchill, and that, that socialist slime bag, communist ridden, FDR and his administration. Look, they all have problems. All of them. The good guys did not win World War II, okay? And let me just say, maybe there weren't any good guys, alright? Let's just leave it at that, but I think you all can piece it together. If we ever had a chance to live in a world without Zionist, bankster, usury, and interest, and things like the Federal Reserve and all the central banking systems all around the world, we had that chance in World War II, and we lost it. And they knew, all of those who opposed the banksters and the Zionists, knew exactly what was going to happen if Germany lost the war. And that is precisely why we are in the grief we are in now. Go ahead, Harry.
Okay. Let's not forget that John F. Kennedy said he was going to take us off the Federal Reserve, and they sent him through Dealey Plaza. And when Jörg Haider got powerful, he said he was going to take Austria out of the European Union and off the euro, and he had an accident. Anyhow, the Commissar thing came about from 1991 when I was there by myself, and again, it was a round table situation, but this time it was round. There were about a dozen Soviet admirals, and one by one, going around from the left, they would ask me a question about submarine history, which I would answer. But straight across the table from me was this silver-haired admiral with steely blue eyes and mutton chop sideburns, and he was just boring a hole into my head with his eyes. And finally it came his turn to ask a question, and instead of asking about submarine history, he asked, why are you here? So as you've known me a short time, you know I'm a pretty direct guy.
Yeah.
But I pointed at him, and through my translator, which was Anatoly, I said, I was told you are my enemy. And he stiffened up in his chair. And I said, but you were told that I'm your enemy. This was at the height of the Cold War. So he grudgingly nodded and admitted that that's what he was told. And I said, but I don't see an enemy across from me. I see a man like myself who wants his children to grow up in peace and without war. And so I said, we're not enemies. We think alike. And I said, so let's toast with a great American invention, Pepsi. And he says, no, we toast with a great Russian invention, vodka. I said, there, see, we've got common ground already. And like somebody had thrown a switch, all of them started smiling. They got out of their chairs. They came over, were shaking my hand. Of course, the kiss on both sides of the neck, that I never got used to that. But they were pulling their medals off their uniforms and pinning them on my sport coat.
Oh, how funny.
Oh, they're great people. You know, the people are people everywhere.
Yeah.
It's the governments that are not
set
up. So anyhow, they made me a commissar of the Soviet Union, commissar to the Peace to the Oceans Committee. And, of course, when the Soviet Union fizzled, so did the commissarship.
Mm-hmm.
I never got a paycheck out of that thing. So, incidentally, you might want to mention to your listeners that if they go to our website, sharkhunters.com, there's a lot more photos and the DVDs.
Oh, that's wonderful. You can go on patrol anytime you want there.
Yeah, go with the pictures. And also, you know, as you know, we have our daily headline news update. So if your readers want to just send me an email at sharkhunters@earthlink.net, and tell us they want to get that
put them on the list.
Update.
Yeah.
Bingo, there you go.
Well, your DVDs and books are extraordinary, and they are predicated on reality.
Oh, yeah.
Not propaganda.
Right. There's a lot of them you just can't get anywhere else, because a lot of them are coming from battlefield footage that our members took. We have over 7,700 members, minus those who have died, unfortunately, and a few that I've thrown out. But a couple of thousand were veterans, and a lot of them sent us their film footage. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, we've even got some propaganda We've got three Russian videos, the Soviet videos that are propaganda about how they're the good guys, the Germans are the bad guys, and in every one, the pilot, the Soviet pilot, sacrifices himself to destroy German submarines or planes or whatever. It's cute. But the neat thing about that, you see how it really was living in Russia at that time, because this was filmed in Russia. We've also got Japanese films filmed by a producer that didn't take any of the propaganda. He just filmed it the way it was. And, you know, you see where during the American fighter sweeps, they're blowing everything up on the island. You also see a lot of footage from Japanese gun cameras. So you won't find it anywhere else. And they're reasonable, I think. I think they're $30 plus shipping, of course. Uncle Sam has to get his piece. So then we went to
Uncle Sam Goldberg, you mean?
Whatever his name used to be. My dad retired from the post office, but that was back in 1955 when they had Pride. I guess some of them still do now, but they're more interested in their salary. But they wore badges like federal marshals back in those days. So, anyhow, all the admirals who I mentioned by name here, they're all Shark Hunter members or were until their passing. We also visited the famous Hermitage, which was one of the palaces of Catherine the Great. You know, they had a winter palace and a summer palace a couple of miles from each other. It doesn't make sense to me. I would think you'd put your winter palace someplace down where it's warm, but no, just down the block from the other one. Huge, probably the largest and finest fine art museum in the world. It's like 8 blocks long, 2 or 3 blocks wide, 2 basements down, 3 floors up, all original masterpieces. Just incredible. And every place we went, we were in Navy staff cars with Navy drivers, Navy guides, etc. And, of course, always Anatoly, the chief of the intelligence for the Soviet Navy, although I didn't know that was what he was at the time. All I knew was when he said something in Russian, people opened doors and got out of the way for him. So then we were... we were at the Russian Artillery Museum and the Russian Submarine Academy. The deputy chief of the academy and 4 full captains took us on a tour of that impressive school. We have it all on videotape, which we have not converted over to DVD yet because the tape was like 8 hours long, and you can't get 8 hours onto a DVD. So then I think it was 5 days, 6 days in St. Petersburg. We were going to go to Kronstadt, which was the former formerly Königsberg, and it's now called Kaliningrad. It's still today. It's just one little bubble of Russia that is totally cut off from all the rest of Russia, but they still won't give it back. It should have been.
It's wild.
Yeah, it should have been East Prussia. So we departed one morning in Navy staff cars, headed for the secret Russian Air Force base north of St. Petersburg, and we were going to ride on the personal plane of Admiral Vladimir Egorov, who was chief of the Russian Baltic Sea Fleet. And we're driving through the forest, beautiful forest outside of St. Petersburg to the north, and every so often we'd see big holes in the ground, you know, overgrown with vegetation. These were bomb holes. And we're going and going, and we're damn near to Finland, it seemed. And Anatoly, chief of intelligence for the Soviet Navy, he had to stop some old man walking down the side of the road and asked him where was the secret Air Force base. And this old man who was out picking mushrooms, he gave us directions to the secret Air Force base. So we went back, drove down this little ruddy track in the woods, and suddenly once you're out of sight of the roadway, then you got a nice big drive and guard towers and everything. So we got on to Admiral Vigorov's airplane. Looked like a small version of a C-123. And not really high-tech. We were treated like first class, though, because we each got a little cup of fruit juice and a little slab of cake, about 1 inch square.
Picture 16? You're about ready to get on an airplane there, small one.
Yeah. No, that's where we're just getting off.
Getting off, okay.
And one of the guys who was with us, Dr. Schatz, had his wife with us, and we were in the air, and she had to go to the bathroom. Well, there is no bathroom. So she had to go in the back of the plane, and there was a bucket on the floor, and that was the bathroom.
No, it works.
So we landed, and photo 16, you see there's a circle around a book that officer is holding.
Yeah.
I had no idea my ancestor, James Fenimore Cooper, was a huge name in Russia. And that was his book, The Last of the Mohicans.
How funny.
Yeah, and I had to autograph that.
Oh, how interesting.
For the pilot's daughter, Natasha. She was a little girl. And so in the next picture, number 17, we met Rear Admiral Valery Bobrovsky. He was the first deputy chief of the headquarters of the Baltic Sea Fleet.
We have to pause again here, but you got to meet the cream of the cream.
Oh, yeah. They were all members of Shark Hunters. We make sure we've got the doors open.
Unreal. Wow. Okay, just a sec. We'll come right back with hour two. And Harry Cooper and our patrol to the newly fallen Soviet Union. Back in a minute. Okay, it's our monthly visit with Harry Cooper and SharkHunters.com. We're taking a little walk through a glimpse of the former Soviet Union. This is very shortly after it came down. I do remember the looting going on. I think it was 500 tons of gold in one shipment that was taken out. The Rothschild banksters got their hooks on a lot of stuff. And the scientists who worked for the military, especially biological warfare scientists, nuclear scientists, chemical weapons scientists, cyber war scientists, all of those people basically went on the marketplace looking for work. And they were being picked up by countries all around the world for a thousand or two a month, which was a great deal of money compared to what they were making. It was a bazaar for brilliance. And many of the Middle Eastern countries bought these folks up, and they went all over the place. Go ahead, Harry.
Right. Most of them came to either the U.S. or the Soviet Union. Quite a few, though, made it down to Argentina. But we'll talk about that when we talk about Argentina. Let's take a look over at photo 17.
Oh, before we do that, I want to draw everyone's attention to the archives in the center column at Rents.com. You'll find Harry Cooper right there. And I would like to point you in the direction of our conversation on what really happened to Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun. And Harry has done the research. Over 20 years ago, he published the book which almost obviously and invariably tells the truth, the real story about what happened.
Right.
They got out, they went to Argentina, and that's where at least Mr. Hitler passed away in approximately 1963. The story is there. It's Harry Cooper's story. He did the work. He put the pieces together. There has been a recent effort to launch a documentary with the idea, the concept that these people were the first. No, they stole Harry Cooper's work is what happened. I don't mind saying it. They didn't let him prove it. But anyway, Harry's book is there. It's all there at SharkHunters.com. Go ahead.
Yeah, the book is called Escape from the Bunker. And the follow-on book is called The Secret Alliance, which shows how it was possible. Juan Perón made a speech, and he said, "We will never forget We will never be able to repay and never forget the immense debt of gratitude we owe our comrades of the German Army. He made that speech in 1952. The war had been over for 7 years, so there's a tip-off. But that's a long story. We'll get into that shortly. Move over to photo 17. Here we are on the tarmac at Kaliningrad. That's me with the back to the camera, and I'm speaking to the one-star admiral, Valery Bobrovsky. And you see he's got one large star on his shoulder.
Yeah, I see it. Yeah.
Yeah, and the guy who's glaring at me, he has one small star. That means he's captain of the third rank, which to us would be a lieutenant commander. He was our translator, and he looks like his shorts are too tight there because he's not happy. After I had signed the book for our aircraft commander, I asked him if I could videotape our pilot.
Mm-hmm.
No problem. So I'm standing there videotaping our pilot, and I didn't think anybody was watching, so I took a 90-degree turn to my left, and I was videotaping all the fighter bomber squadrons. And then after about 3 minutes, I took another turn to my left and was videotaping all their bomber squadrons.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt a tap on my shoulder, and it was this guy. Sir, what are you doing? I'm videotaping my pilot. Sir, your pilot is behind you. I said, oh, they all look alike, don't they? Well, then suddenly at one point the camera disappeared. And when it finally came back, I still had all my stuff, but I think they checked it. So anyhow, now the officers from captain on down have the small stars.
Mm-hmm.
Rear 1 and 2 star admirals have the star like you see on Bobrovsky there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we move to photo 18, and you see the very huge star on that admiral's wrist, and again on his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
That is Vice Admiral or Admiral. They've got a much bigger star.
Hmm.
I guess you got to know what to look for.
Yeah.
Now this is going to, that guy, the Admiral there, that's Vice Admiral Valery Gershonov. Gershonov was commander of the Russian Baltic Sea Fleet.
Hmm.
His brother, who we'll talk about later, was a 2-star, and lots of nepotism there back in the Soviet Navy. And this will tie in. Remember I told you there was a guy dressed like Peter the Great.
Mm-hmm.
They had us all lined up, and that's Anatoly on the far left, the chief of intelligence for the Soviet Navy. Everybody took turns getting up, making a toast to this, that, or the other thing.
Huh.
And I learned how to keep my lips pressed closed and pretend like I'm downing this shot of
vodka. I've heard that before from other people.
Yeah, and then pretend like I'm refilling my glass real quick, because you can't drink vodka with those Russians. Jesus, they drink it like water.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, it was my turn to make a toast. We all got up. I raised my glass. I said, I want to make a toast to the two men who made it possible for us to become friends, to Mikhail Gorbachev and Ronald Reagan. They all sat down and folded their hands, and here I am with my group standing up, and I'm, what the heck? So I looked at my translator. That's the bald guy next to the admiral now, his new translator. I said, you people don't like my Ronald Reagan? He stood up, and incidentally, Reagan was a member of Shark Hunters also. He stood up. He says, we will drink to Ronald Reagan. We will not drink to the traitor Gorbachev.
Oh, funny.
So I said, okay.
Yeah.
So Ronald Reagan, everybody stood up, we drank, pat each other on the back, whoopee-doo. So after the dinner...
By the way, the guy on the right of the admiral...
the bald guy.
Yeah, he looks
On the admiral, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, who does he look like? He looks like a young Vladimir Lenin.
Oh, so he does, so he does. Hmm, bless his heart.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Anyhow... After the dinner, I pulled the translator aside. I said, why do you call Gorbachev a traitor? He said, a totalitarian government is wrong. We understand that. But to tear it down with nothing to go to is even worse. So in my conversations with these officers for the rest of the tour,
mm-hmm.
I got the sense that they were totally lost. You know, they're told, okay, you're free. Now you can go do whatever you want, live wherever you want, have whatever job you want. And I'm thinking, yeah, good, I'm free, but what do I do? I've always been told where to live. I've always been told what work I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And now I can make my own decisions. I have no idea what I want to do.
That's very telling.
They were 70-something years under communism, 300-something years they were serfs under the czars.
Yeah.
And so some wanted to see a czar come back. Some wanted to see communism come back. Basically, what they wanted was they wanted somebody to give them some direction.
Yeah.
They seem to have settled down now, but...
Who came back? The Zionist bankster cartel through the oligarchs.
Where there's a vacuum...
Yeah.
Somebody's going to fill it. And the Russian mafia, of course, those guys, most of them never made it to their 35th birthday. They lived pretty big, you know, multi-million dollar guys, but they were popping each other off, you know, like the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Mm-hmm.
Only much more sophisticated because they picked up a lot of KGB people.
Mm-hmm.
And, one time the hotel we were supposed to stay at in Yalta on the 1995 tour, we had to change hotels at the last minute because the manager of the hotel went out to get into his car, opened the door, noticed that there was something sticky on his car door, and it was DMSO, dimethyl sulfoxide, which...
Goes right through the skin, yeah.
Yeah, it goes right through the skin. And
What was it transporting, do we know?
Yeah, sarin.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah, so the guy was dead by the time he hit the ground. And so they were, you know, they were bumping each other off like mad. I don't know if they're still doing it, but a 35-year-old mafia boss was the exception. And we'd get to see him when we were there in the outdoor cafe. You'd hear...
Uh-huh.
A roar of an engine coming up the road, and a Mercedes had come up and park, and this guy in an ill-fitting communist suit had come in with gold chains around his neck. You knew he was the boss because he had gold chains. Then comes the guy in the Jeep with silver chains. He was the assistant. They'd sit there and glare at the mafia guys on the other side, try to stare each other down, I guess. It's kind of funny.
It's pretty primitive.
Oh, yeah.
Kids and who's king of the sandbox?
Right, they had so much money. When I was there in '91, I saw a huge floor display simulating the scene in Red Square with the 162 German regimental standards that the Red Army threw down in a pile. They had them there in the Red Army Museum under glass. It was like 40 feet by 40 feet and about 3 or 4 feet high of all these flags. And as soon as these wealthy guys come in, boy, they were buying these regimental standards out the back door of the museum. Nobody knows where some of them have gone now.
It's really amazing, and you know about this as much as anyone, how valuable and how fascinated the world is with German World War II. They call it wartime memorabilia, whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
They're even digging up World War II German plane wrecks, 109s, whatever.
Yeah, they just found a Dornier DO-17.
Yeah, I saw that. Pulled up out of the English Channel.
That's right. We've been on top of that every step of the way. As you know, we have what we call SEIG agents, S-E-I-G, which means Shark Hunters, Eagle Hunters Intelligence Group.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a couple guys over there in England, and they've been watching this come up, and we've been getting photos and everything, which we send out on our daily headline news.
I mean, that's a little, like, if you can find a piece of a landing gear of an FW-190 or something,
what
an incredible piece of history that is. And people, they just, I don't know what they're bringing now, thousands of dollars for something like that.
Yeah, it depends on what it is. A couple of members of Shark Hunters, Wolf Harden Gallery, Steve Wolf and Neil Harden, they've got stuff that the average guy can't even think about affording. For instance, they've got the award document for the Knight's Cross with Oak Leaf and Swords, They don't have the medal, but they've got the document for the one that went to Otto Kretschmer.
Who was
also a member and a good friend of mine.
Oh.
$250,000 is what this thing's going for. And if they could have gotten the actual medal itself,
well,
the provenance to prove it was Silent Otto's, another $250,000.
Easy. Back in a second with Harry. Hold on. We'll take our break. Okay, another fascinating walk back into history with Harry. Sharkhunters.com, all kinds of things there for you, and I hope you'll stop by and take a good look and buy a couple of the DVDs or books, whatever, and do listen to our program about Escape from the Bunker. It's right there in the center of Rents.com. You'll see it, and lots to think about with that one. Okay, Harry, go ahead.
Okay. While we were there in Kaliningrad and also Baltiisk, which used to be Pillau, they took us to, excuse me, got a frog in my throat here. They took us to various places, like you see in photo 19.
You need a shot of vodka.
Yeah, that'll put me out. No, I'm Irish. Should be Irish whiskey.
Sorry.
And anyhow, photo 19, that's Dr. Schatz with the blue bag over his shoulder. He was first officer on a German U-boat, and he was just fascinated. He said the reason he goes on Shark Hunters tours, he was with us in 1991 when we went into Red China, and we went places nobody else can go. He said the reason he goes with us is because we go places nobody else can go. Photo 20, we visited on board that sub chaser. 21, we visited on board that submarine. I think that's a, if I remember correct me, it's a Delta. Then in number 22, that's the destroyer named Druzhny. Why would anybody name a destroyer Druzhny?
Because it's so easy to pronounce.
Yeah, it means friendly. Uh-huh. Whoever heard of a friendly destroyer? They're trying to kill you.
That's kind of like the friendly ghost. All right.
Yeah, right. So then in 23, that was our last dinner there in Kaliningrad, because then we were getting ready to leave the next day, and they put on board the airplane, they put plenty of beer, wine, water, bread, sliced apples, and, of course, cases of vodka. This particular vodka was so strong, even the Russians had to mix it with water, and we headed on to Moscow. And don't forget to remind your listeners, if they go to sharkhunters@earthlink.net and tell us they want to see the free headline news, they'll get it every day. We landed in Moscow, which is, or was, I guess it still is, just a magnificent city, not quite as opulent as St. Petersburg, but you go down into the subways and very steep escalators, and you go down at least a quarter of a mile down into the earth, and each one of the subway stations is like a little mini museum. It's all marble, and they've got fine art paintings.
They're supposed to be gorgeous, yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So,
well, those are underground bomb shelters. The Russians are just about finished now with a complete underground shelter system, apparently, which will accommodate, in times of even a nuclear war, all of the residents of Moscow.
Yeah.
That's what they claim.
Yeah, just think how wealthy all our countries could be if there was not a threat of war here. But we're...
Good for business, Harry. Good for business. Think of all those people
our
working.
Our fearless leader there, Barry, in the White House, is about to start sending people into Syria, I think.
Yeah. Well,
bless his heart.
Whatever he's ordered to do, he'll do.
Yeah, that's right. He's just a puppet. And I remember back when I was a young punk in the Air Force loading hydrogen bombs onto B-47s. Oh, man, I hated them Russians because I was told we're supposed to hate them Russians.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, I know they're just like anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And the Germans, I grew up during the war years. Ah, they're all Nazis. All them Germans are Nazis. We got to kill them all because they're all bad people. Then you find out, no, they were normal people like you and me. Fighting for their country.
Yeah.
That'll get you a lot of hostile emails.
It's the truth. It's fine.
Yeah. We got to Moscow, and we were billeted in a hotel that had previously been the accommodations for delegates from various Soviet states.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty high class. We toured the Admiralty there as guest of Admiral Felix Gromov.
Which picture are we on now, approximately?
Well, we haven't hit any pictures yet.
Okay.
We just left Druzhny, and we haven't quite got to any Moscow photos yet.
Okay.
We toured the Red Army Museum, which is what I mentioned, where all the regimental standards were laying on the floor. The Leibstandarte Adolf Hitler, the first SS, was the one on top. We also saw the Viking Division, which was the 5th SS.
Oh, you say laying on the floor. They were just piled up there laying on the floor?
Well, they were in a display.
Uh-huh.
A floor display, which was like I said, about 40 feet by 40 feet.
And you could walk over the top of it?
No, you could walk around it because it had glass over the top.
I see.
But that's the stuff that's been sold to the young mafia guys.
Wow.
We also saw a huge, big, crumpled up pile of aluminum, which was Gary Francis Powers' U-2 plane after
the
crash.
Yeah.
And there was a tabletop display about 4 foot by 4 foot. With some dirt in there and a torn-up German battle flag and a Schmeisser. And there was a whole bunch of iron crosses and knight's crosses in there. And I was just amazed. And I mentioned to our guide, a woman named Olga, that there were so many. And she said, duh, and in basement we have 2 tons more medals. They had intercepted a couple trucks full of medals that Hitler had sent to the front.
Huh.
By Moscow to spur his people on, and the Soviets intercepted it, so these medals were never issued to anybody, but they had them in the basement. I wanted to buy a bunch of them, but no, they weren't interested in that. I also wanted to buy 1 square meter of the aluminum off Gary Francis Powers' plane that we could cut into 1-inch squares and make them available to our members. That didn't go anywhere either. So then...
Always thinking.
We also saw the Fender flag for Field Marshal von Paulus's car. That was in the Red Army Museum, too.
Hmm.
Then we were at the hotel, and Anatoly, this is when I was starting to realize the power this guy had. We got to the hotel, and he was looking very upset. Chernyavin is supposed to be here, but Chernyavin is not here. Chernyavin is the fleet admiral, 5-star, Vladimir Chernyavin, the last supreme commander of the Soviet Navy. And he had been forced to resign about a week before we got there. And so he was on vacation down at the Black Sea. Anatoly was stomping around, steam coming out his ears. We were sitting in the lobby, and he went into a side room, and I could see him with a phone, and he was just lighting up that phone, stomping around and yelling into the phone. He came out and he says, Chernyavin will be here tomorrow. I'm thinking, what kind of power does this guy have? He can order a 5-star admiral around.
Mm-hmm.
So the next day, there's Chernyavin in photo number 24. That's me on the left and Chernyavin on the right holding his shark hunter's hat. And in photo 25, that's Chernyavin.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody told him a joke, I guess, and the ever-present Anatoly next to him.
Uh-huh.
And he was just a great guy, and he was happy and at ease. I guess he was kind of happy that his burden of running the second largest navy in the world was no longer on
his
shoulder.
Back. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and at least he didn't resign like most of them resigned under Stalin, you know, with the bullet in the back of the head.
Yep.
He got to walk out. And photo 26, that's just a relaxed time. That's Chernyavin with his hands up. Anatoly, the intelligence guy, then me and another fella. And 27 is Chernyavin when he's all dressed up for formal occasions. So we visited there. We toured Moscow. We stayed at the Cosmo Hotel, which I was told was home of the most beautiful night butterflies in all Russia. And, you know, I'm kind of naive and stupid. Okay, what the hell kind of butterflies are these? Well, these are the hookers.
Ah.
Yeah, and they look very nice in the evening, but mm-hmm. when you see them again in the morning at breakfast, they look like they've been three rounds with Muhammad Ali.
Or two bottles of vodka.
Yeah, well, yeah. And your phone was constantly ringing. Hello, I am Natasha. Yeah, what do you need, Natasha? I come to your room. I have sex with you. No, thank you, Natasha. Well, but I am, it is not so much, Natasha, goodbye. And then the next one rings and it's Olga.
This is standard operating procedure, or was it something special for you?
Well, I don't know. This was back in 1992, so maybe things have changed. I don't know, but they knew, well, because on each floor, there was a woman in charge of that floor. The elevators opened in the middle of the floor. There'd be a whole bunch of rooms off to the left and to the right, and you had to get your key from this woman who was at her desk on your floor. And when you left, you had to give her back your key. And so she knew who the single guys were, and she was apparently giving all this information out to the working girls. So I don't know if anybody else took advantage of it. I wasn't interested. They were beautiful, but my money is for other things. Besides, I was married. Still am.
That too, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we went to museums all around Moscow. And on other tours, we went to Monina, one of the biggest Air Force museums in the world, and also to Kubinka, the biggest armor museum in the world, where they have the only German Maus left in existence. It's a tank that weighed umpty gazillion tons, and the track was 1 meter wide on each track.
Is it bigger than a King Tiger?
Oh, way bigger. Way bigger. They only made three of them. It couldn't cross bridges because the bridges couldn't hold it. It was like about 20 or 30 tons heavier than a King Tiger. So they had this, they had armor from everywhere.
A mouse. They called it a mouse.
Yeah, they called it a mouse. M-A-U-S. That means mouse. And we still have videotapes on that, but we're trying to convert them over to DVDs. I'm going to have to edit a bunch. And then I threw in photo number 28. That is Major General Peter Barabolia. Now, Anatoly, the chief of intelligence, has been here to my house twice as a visitor. And Barabolia came one time. What's unique about him, he was the only general in the Soviet Navy. And I asked him, I said,
how does that work?
Yeah, that's what I asked him. I said, what's going on here? How can you be a general in the Navy? And he said, Chernyevin, the five-star, was a friend of his, and he asked him the same question. He said, why am I a general in your Navy? And Chernyevin told him, my friend Peter, I have many hundreds of admirals. I have only one general, and you're it.
That's funny.
He was a major general of international justice. And that photo was shot at a sanatorium outside of Moscow. They had an interesting medical procedure. To keep you from getting sick, you took a vacation every year at a sanatorium for 30 days.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, hell of a deal. But the buildings, they were all Soviet made. They were starting to crumble. They were made in the 50s, and they were starting to crumble already. And then the last pictures, 29 and 30, that's my identification. I am now an honorary Russian submarine officer. Я вас почетный русский подводник.
Wow. You must have a heck of a library full of medals and memorabilia at your house.
All from other... I never got any medals when I was in the Air Force. Didn't even get a good conduct medal because I had trouble with authority. And I've got... then you see down there, number 31, that's the Admiral Kuznetsov Humanitarian Medal that the Russian Navy gave me for...
Oh,
my
nice.
Work at bringing former enemies
together. Both sides
together,
yeah.
Yeah, right. Our motto is yesterday's enemies are today's friends. And when we'd get together with veterans of both sides, they'd meet and they'd become friends and they'd be drinking together. And what they found out was that they weren't different. They only wore different uniforms. And that's what it came down to. So that was our 1992 tour. Now, when we went back in 95, I don't have the photo here, but it's on the website. If your listeners want to go to it and click on previous tours and go to 1995, we were guest of honor again on board the cruiser Smolny. And there's a photo on the fantail of all the admirals lined up there. Grishanov, the younger brother, was one of them. And there's a guy in a rumpled gray suit, your typical Russian suit, where one size fits all. You put it on, get in the shower, and let it shrink up to your size. And I didn't even realize it at the time. One of our members came back to me a couple of years later and says, hey, pull up that photo. And I pulled up the photo, and he says, you know who that guy is in the gray suit? I said, no, I met him, and I talked for about a half hour, but I can't remember his name. It's Vladimir Putin.
Not too funny.
Yeah. He struck me as being a pretty decent guy, pretty powerful guy, don't take no for an answer type. So, and we went again in 96 for the 300th anniversary of the Russian Navy. And we were at the Black Sea at Sevastopol, or as they pronounce it, Sevastopol. And man, did they put on a show. All their ships, except for their heavy cruisers, came down the river slowly, and we were in the honors seats, and we had Spetsnaz guys all around us, which are the Russian version of SEALs.
Mm-hmm.
And one by one, the ships and boats would come by, and I was sitting with a U.S. Navy submarine veteran, a torpedoman, and there was a sub chaser going by at that time. And I said, can they steer those torpedoes from the sub chasers? He says, no, I don't think so. They fire and forget. And he says, why do you ask? I says, because that guy just fired one, and it looks like it was supposed to go out through the opening in the seawall, but I don't think it's going to make it. It looks like it's heading for the seawall. And about that time, Cub Bluey, 600 pounds of Torpex, blew a huge hole in the breakwater.
Huh.
What the heck? They got a lot of free labor.
Yeah.
And we were also, on that tour, we were also in Balaclava, if you'll remember Alfred Lord Tennyson and his charge of the Light
Brigade.
In Ukraine. That's right. We were there, and we were actually in the Valley of Death, as they called it.
Not very deep valley, is it?
You're right. It's not. It's just two hills, maybe 200 feet higher than the surrounding area. And the British had their guns on those two hills, their cannons, but they were manned by the Italian allies of the Brits. But then the Russian army came marching out, and the Italians, how do I put this politely, the Italians left the bunkers. They left the cannons, and the Russians took over the cannons.
Mm-hmm.
The Brits didn't know it, so the Russian cavalry faked a frantic retreat through the valley, and as the Light Brigade chased them, they came into the crossfire and just got cut to ribbons. And these guys were the sons of the nobility, because the Light Brigade, the Light Cavalry, were basically parade guys. The heavy cavalry were the ones that did the fighting, but boy, they got shot to hell. And what we also saw there, we went out on a long, long point of land, and there were ancient Phoenician lookout towers on this point, and one of them was staffed by Russian whatever they were doing. They were sitting there with heavy binoculars looking at us also. But as we looked back into the entrance of the harbor at Balaclava, we could see the giant iron door in the side of the mountain where the submarines would go in. They'd open the door, the submarines would go in. They had a huge complex inside this mountain.
Right.
More bunkers. So, but anyhow, like I say, your people can send me an email at sharkhunters@earthlink.net and tell me they want to get on to the daily headline news. Now, for next month, if it's okay with you, I'd like to do Argentina, because we're going back there in January.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And then as a treat here, if you're interested, we've done a tremendous amount of research on the death of Jörg Haider, and we've got a lot of photographs.
Oh, yeah, this is hard news stuff, and yeah, I'd like that very much.
Okay, I'm not sure if I want to do that before I go to Austria or not, because some of our people over there have been told back off this quest, and some of them have been jailed. Others have their phones tapped.
Yeah.
Of course, we all do now, as we're finding out.
Yep. All right, we've got to take one more break. Harry, hang on, and we'll come right back with more in just a few minutes. Okay, back and talking with Harry Cooper. All right, Harry, go ahead.
Well, shame on me. It pretty well wraps up my Russian tour, so open another topic for me, because I know we've still got 10 minutes.
Well, we could talk about Austria a little bit and what has happened since we did our program on your research on the obvious likelihood that Hitler and well, they both went there. It's hot. Now, Eva Braun had, I've forgotten the exact storyline, but there was some, your friend who was very well connected was apparently asked to go to New Mexico to, check on two little children.
Right. Stern and Adolfo.
Tell us a little bit more about that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, that was Don Angel Alcazar de Velasco, who was a member of Shark Hunters. He was also a, he was an agent for the Germans. And when I tried to, I went to confirm it with an American spy, he was laughing. I said, "What are you laughing about?" He says, "Yeah, he was a spy. He was just such a bad spy." And, his first big mission was called Operation Willie. And this is when King Edward VIII had abdicated to marry that really ugly Wallace Simpson.
Now, the real reason he abdicated was not her. That's what I hear.
Okay, well, that's not in my area of expertise, so I wouldn't know. But by then, he was the Duke of Windsor, and he was in Portugal. He was living up, the grand playboy lifestyle.
Uh-huh.
And the Germans wanted to grab him. Churchill wanted to do something to keep him silent, and so Don Angel became friends with the Duke of Windsor, and under Operation Willie, he was supposed to convince the Duke to go with him on a hunting trip into Spain, where SS people would be waiting to grab the former king, take him back to Berlin, and play let's make a deal with the Churchill government, because Hitler always wanted to get some kind of peace accord with England. He never wanted to go to war with England.
Yeah.
Churchill was the one who was pushing that. So,
and for history's sake, remember, the Germans did not bomb England except in retribution for the attacks, the aerial attacks on German cities and Berlin.
Exactly. And it was England that declared war against Germany, not the other way around. And Germany, despite certain people saying that Hitler wanted to kill all the Jews and rule the world, that's absolutely false. The German citizens were being massacred in Poland, and that's why he sent the troops in. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. Excuse me. But anyhow, Don Angel was supposed to get him to go on a hunting trip into Spain so he could be grabbed. Well, that fizzled.
Mm-hmm.
And then Churchill decided he had to shut this guy up because he openly was commenting for the press that England could be bombed into surrender and that the Germans assured him he would be king again once they took over England.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when Churchill shipped him off to the Bahamas, where he was Governor General of the Bahamas, and Don Angel went off to other quiet pursuits. But then at the end of the, toward the end of the war, he was no longer working for the Abwehr because the Abwehr had been discredited. Canaris was sentenced to death, and he was in Flossenbürg prison camp, where he stayed until about 2 days before the Allies overran the camp, and they gave him the piano wire exit, hanged him with piano wire so he could dance and strangle. But then Don Angel was transferred over to SS intelligence. That was the Sicherheitsdienst of the SS, and he was based in the bunker. And that's our entire book, Escape from the Bunker, is the 145-page-long, single-spaced, typewritten letter that Don Angel sent us about his experiences there and how he saw Hitler and Eva Braun forcibly drugged under orders of Martin Bormann and removed from the Führer bunker. And then, of course, he met up with Hitler back in 1952, way down south. In his book, or in his letter, which is in our book, he said it was Antarctica, but I think that was deliberate disinformation, because I think it was the area of Patagonia where we're going to be visiting this coming January. Because in the height of summer here is the dead winter down there, and one of my people down there said he flew into this town in July or so, which is the height of winter down there. He said everything was white. You couldn't see anything. It looked like the South Pole. So we go in January when it's the height of summer down there. Beautiful weather. Fascinating country. I really like Argentina. Buenos Aires is a big, modern, cosmopolitan city with ancient, not ancient, but old European-type flavor. And right now, your Yankee dollar packs one heck of a punch down there. The official exchange rate, I think, is about 5.5 or 6 pesos to the dollar. But on the black market, you can get 10 pesos on the dollar. So you can live pretty doggone good down there on Yankee money.
Well, that's what they say. It's unfortunately overrun by our friends from that little democracy in the Middle East. There's a lot of activity there. They've been surveying Argentina for decades, especially the Patagonia.
Well, we've got from some of our people that there are certain people that speak in a Middle Eastern language, fill in the blanks, that have pretty well taken over the southern end of Patagonia, which is down almost to the Tierra del Fuego.
Correct, yeah.
There was small airstrip down there, which was commercial, private, and military used it. Now it's only military. And they're buying up land like mad down there because allegedly there's vast deposits of oil under there. That's what we get from our people.
There's oil under almost everything. And
yeah.
Anybody who studies geology, honestly, will come up with the same conclusion.
Yeah.
There's no shortage of oil. There never will be.
There's a whole mess of oil underneath our country, but we're not allowed to go digging for it.
Of course.
Because we're supposed to get bankrupt.
And, exactly.
And this is no joke. My wife now, when she buys stuff at the store, she looks at the label, and you can get a lot of brand name stuff that's made in the U.S. And you know, and food, none of it. We don't buy anything that's made in China.
Well, you shouldn't. No, and for a number of reasons.
Yeah, I don't like buying anything from China at all because. They're in our current magazine, the newest magazine that just went out, we've got photos of their two newest Corvette anti-submarine ships that we're paying for. Every time you buy, it's not only in the U.S. Every major country is just inundated with made-in-China goods.
Mm-hmm.
So in our current magazine, we've got pictures of those two Corvettes still being fitted out right underneath the sign in Chinese that says, photography absolutely forbidden.
Yeah, well, that's kind of cute.
We don't read Chinese either.
No, I know. The Chinese, if you folks haven't seen it, are about to embark on a tremendous project in Nicaragua to build a second canal that will be so much bigger, apparently, than the Panama Canal. It's not even a contest. A huge project that Chinese are going to build in Nicaragua.
Yeah.
A second canal to transit.
Well, they're running the Panama Canal now. I predict
both ends of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I predicted when that nitwit Jimmy Carter gave back the canal to the Panamanians, I predicted that the Chinese were going to take it over in short order. Because at that time, I was a yacht bum living on my boat in the Bahamas.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, within 3 years, people were writing into the boating magazines about the nightmares they were having trying to transit the canal. With the Chinese in power and how the costs have gone way, way up. And, they tried to buy out the Long Beach shipyard in California. I don't know if they ever succeeded or not.
No, they didn't. It didn't work. It's my understanding anyway.
But, you know, what do we have in shipyards? The Philadelphia Naval Shipyard, the oldest one we had, was sold many years ago to the Caverner Group, which is a Scandinavian. We don't even own our own shipyards.
Nah, the country's gone.
Yeah, it would be in a hell of a
shape. Well, where do they put these FTCs in? Foreign trade zones all over the country? Hundreds of them. They're literally going to be sovereign extensions of countries overseas that buy these leased parcels for, I guess, 100 years here. Mm-hmm. American law will not apply there. And one of the big ones, one of the first ones, is supposed to be 7 square miles south of the Boise, Idaho airport, and it's owned by the Chinese. So it'll be like a little Beijing there.
Wow. Well, that
Trojan horses everywhere.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody is so dumb they can't see why there's this huge push for disarmament. Disarm the American people so that you can overrun them better. However, the opposition to that is stiffening. I was at one of my club meetings the other day, and there was a lady there who's head of an outfit called the Well-Armed Woman. And they're trying to bring as many women into weapons safety, weapons familiarization.
Well, self-protection, that's what it is.
And my daughter, who's 22 years old, beautiful girl, you know, she's a model. You get the magazine, saw her picture for her birthday.
Mm-hmm.
She's also 3.83 grade point average college student,
going
for her doctorate.
Yeah.
She and my wife both are going to go get carry permits.
They should.
Yeah, in Florida it's legal.
I recommend all Americans get a concealed carry permit. Even if you don't own a gun, just go get your permit to let the government know you recognize the Constitution and our Second Amendment.
I stayed away from getting a concealed permit because my Irish temper sometimes flares up,
yeah,
but I don't
want
to think about it after I got somebody blown away because,
you know,
I had a burglar come in my house once when I was about 26 years old. I met him with my pistol in my hand, and he tried to grab his out of his pocket, and it just a little day late and a dollar short. He made a hell of a mess on my carpet. They bleed a lot when you shoot them.
Wow. That's quite a story.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The police were mad at me because I didn't kill him. He was a burglar they had been trying to catch for 3 months.
Well, you're lucky it was back then. If it would be now, you'd be sued. And
sued and probably jailed.
Could be.
And not in Florida, though. That was when I lived up north. Here in Florida, when Jeb Bush was the governor, and he was the best governor in all the years I've lived here, he put in something called the 10-20 life law. If you commit a crime and show a gun, you get 10 years in prison. Fire the gun, you get 20 years. And if anybody gets hurt, you get life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that still on the books?
Oh, yeah. Plus, they've modified the law. It used to be if somebody was coming in your house, coming toward you, you could shoot him because you were being threatened. But if he turned around to leave, you had to let him go. Now they've modified the law. Just chase him down out in your front lawn and shoot him.
Also, interesting.
If you're in your car and you see somebody who you think is going to kill you, you have the legal right to shoot him dead on the highway.
Florida is an interesting place.
I like Florida.
That I've never
plus,
heard.
Also, it's good for an old fart like me who's obnoxious. you don't dare put your hands on a senior citizen because it's a third-degree felony, and you go away for like 5 years.
Really? Just a touch on, huh?
Oh, yeah. That's a battery on an elderly person.
Yeah.
And if you really punch the hell out of the senior citizen, it's called elderly abuse, and they might never see you again.
Wow.
I like Florida.
I
we have
hate
no state
to say
income
it, but...
tax down here. We got low sales tax.
Well, sounds good to me. You'll never be able to qualify as being elderly, Harry. It won't happen. So thank you.
I'm pushing old age.
No. It'll push back.
Yeah. Someday. Anyhow, like I said, next month we'll do Argentina, if that's okay. And then
you
shortly thereafter, I'm waiting for one more report to come in from Austria to finalize what I got. But I got tons of photos.
All right. Well, we'll do this. It'll be something that a lot of Austrians will see. You count on that.
Sounds good.
Okay. Take care, Harry.
All right. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye, Jeff.
Harry Cooper.